It's episode number 49 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. 49, that is 1 under 50.
Good math, Tyler.
I went to private school. Until college.
I was going to say, no you didn't. You went to University of Nebraska. I went to private school.
Your school doesn't exist. Yeah. Somebody tweeted at you that they saw a hat from your school on the television.
Yeah. There was some guy sitting right behind home plate during, I think, one of the Cardinals games last week with a Kenyan hat on. It was either a Kenyan hat or a Kansas State hat, which would make more sense, but it looked closely enough, and the K did look like the Kenyan college K. So,
is that like Hogwarts?
I think so.
Your school?
No, literally, they almost filmed Hogwarts at the campus of Kenyon College because our dining hall is very, very old and witchcrafty like that.
Witchcrafty.
Yeah, that's a word.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it works. Works for me. Hey, welcome in. It's episode number 49 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, the lone podcast on the internet waves about the Colorado Rockies. Not anymore, but it used to be. We are...
Starting off with a lie. Good start.
This week, brought in by the band Burn the Fleet. Big thanks to our pal Adam Peterson for getting us in touch with Burn the Fleet. And you can check those guys out on the old Google machine. Today, Burn the Fleet brings us in. We do need more music, by the way. Just in case y'all were wondering, you can send us your music submissions at purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. But today we were brought in by the song Solitude by Burn the Fleet. They are a Denver band, so big thanks to those guys for getting in touch. And episode number 49, Anthony.
Well, we got a couple, mostly relievers, as you could possibly imagine.
Right.
I mean, usually relievers get those kind of numbers. But Rex Brothers, 2011 to 2014. And good to know that Rex is having such a bounce back
last couple of months now at
AAA Albuquerque. So that's a very good sign. So he's a very good possibility. Adam Eaton in 2009. Jason Grilly worked for a couple of years in 2008 and 2009. Alberto Arias, Tim Haricola, Byung-Hyun Kim from 2005 to 2007. War number 49, Jose Mesa, that guy, Jason Young, Dennis Reyes, Jose Jimenez, one of the greatest closers in Rockies history in 2000 to 2001, Roberto Ramirez, Juan Acevedo, and Scott Fredrickson in 1993.
Jeez Louise, there's a lot of really good choices there.
A lot of really good choices, in fact.
Like my initial, oh man, this is going to be tough.
I know, because...
My initial impulse was Byung-Hyun Kim because we talked about him a little bit last episode, and he was just so hilarious to watch.
He was just a phenomenally inept batter.
He was a pitcher mostly. But man, Jose Mesa, Joe Table's tough too because Joe Table was so controversial because he used to just drill Omar Vizquel every time Omar Vizquel came to the plate.
Every single time.
Man. This is a tough one. Jose Jimenez was a bad closer for a while.
He was a really bad closer for a while.
Dennis Reyes. Dennis Reyes had, I believe this is right. Dennis Reyes, I'm pretty sure, had some sort of weird anxiety problems on the mound. And it used to be like very wound up on the mound. He was always like very anxious and very
fidgety.
Like he would breathe really hard. He was very fidgety. And I'm pretty sure that's why. Pretty sure.
Fair enough.
But yeah, Jose Jimenez was, not very good. Actually, really in his Rockies career, wasn't terrible. 15-23 was his overall hashtag pitcher wins record. 265 games he pitched, 213 of those he finished for 102 saves. And he had a career ERA in Colorado 4.13. So I guess he's not quite as terrible as I remembered. His last year he was 2-10 with a 5.22 ERA and only saved 20 games.
Remember, he threw a no-hitter with the St. Louis Cardinals before coming over, too.
He was very good when he was with St. Louis, shockingly. Well, for that first year, kind of fell off the map the next year.
By the way, while you're thinking about this, Rex Brothers, in his last 11 games with Albuquerque, a 0.87 ERA in 10 1/3 innings. He has 17 strikeouts in that time and only 6 walks, holding opponents to a 139 batting average.
Rexy.
Sexy Rexy is back.
That's fantastic. You know, they could really use a good Rex Brothers.
They could really use good Rex Brothers.
That would be fun
that
to see again.
That would be super.
I want to go BK Kim here for two reasons. One, I don't know why they call him BK Kim.
Doesn't
that was
make any
his
sense whatsoever.
When his name is Byung Hyun Kim, which starts with an H, so I've never figured that out. And two, he was just so fun to dislike. I really did not like Byung Hyun Kim. The thing that's crazy about him, he's only 36 years old.
He could still pitch.
He could still be pitching, and he stopped pitching in the big leagues when he was 28. That's crazy. He burst onto the scene.
He made 50 damn starts for the Rockies. 50!
That is terrible.
It's unconscionable that he made that many starts.
And 70 for the Rockies. Total appearances, 20 relief appearances, 50 starts. Wowzers.
That seems impossible.
That is... And, like, not many of them were good.
No.
Career ERA with the Rockies.
Overall record,
5.33. Yikes. Yeah, that is terrible.
From 2005 to 2007, he made 50 damn starts for this team.
You know, Byung Hyun Kim, he would actually be a very fascinating guy to study. Pulls out recorder, makes mental note. Maybe a book about Byung Hyun Kim one day. But you don't often see Korean guys break into the major leagues at 19. He pitched in 25 games as a 20-year-old when he finally broke into the big leagues. He turned 20 on January 17th of 1999, so he broke in that season and pitched in 20 games for the Diamondbacks. And then, I mean, people remember that he was the guy in the 2001 World Series who gave up the back-to-back walk-off home runs to the Yankees.
He gave up every home run in that series and blew every game in that series, and they still won the series.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
I remember hearing this. I'm not sure if this is true, but I remember hearing after the second game that he blew in the World Series that the Diamondbacks had somebody assigned to his room to make sure that he didn't, like, harm himself, because that's how distraught he was.
Yeah.
But yikes.
What's amazing, he bounced back the next year and a 2.04 ERA and 36 saves for the D-backs. That's actually very, very impressive.
Yeah.
92 Ks in 84 innings. He only walked 26 that year.
It came from that funky arm angle.
Yeah.
Like he,
submariner.
You know, yeah. Man, that is crazy, actually.
That's a fascinating career arc to become a starter after all of that.
I wanted to see if he was in the KBO, the Korea Baseball Organization, but I am not finding him there, despite the fact that he, A, is only 36, B, stopped pitching in the major leagues when he was 28 years old, and C, is listed on the old reliable Wikipedia as being pitching for the Kia Tigers. And you know what? Actually, Byung-Hyun Kim still pitching in Korea. At 36 years old, he has pitched in 11 games this year for the Kia Tigers. He has no wins and 3 losses and an ERA of 6.85. So basically, it's the exact same BK Kim we remember. So that's good. Memorial Edition 49. Like,
after all this talk, we better
make him. We have to. Now we got to make him. Twice gave up ninth inning leads in the 2001 World Series. Took the loss in Game 4. He gave up a game tying homer, I believe, in Game 5, and the Diamondbacks lost that in extra innings. But they did win in 7 games, of course.
This is the most anybody's talked about BK Kim in.
What a fascinating story, though.
Seriously, though.
That's crazy. That never happens. Also, he was a high school teammate of both Jay Sow and Hee-Sop Choi. Remember those two guys?
Boy, Hee-Sop Choi was going to be awesome, and
he
then
was
he had concussions.
He was a is that what kind of threw him off?
I believe it was,
He was a giant. I remember Hee-Sop Choi being a giant. Also, fun fact, since we're, you know, already well off track, the Korean players, and I think the Japanese players do the same thing, but in, like, native baseball games over there, and also, this is how I learned this, in the World Baseball Classic, they say the last name first. So, for example, he would have been Kim Byung-Hyun.
Kim Byung-Hyun.
Or Choi Hee-Sop, and that's how they announce him over the speakers at WBC games. So I always thought that was entertaining.
Yeah, CJ Nitkowski, friend of the PDP.
Right!
He played in Korea, and so he has a very special connection with a lot of those guys who have not only come over and played in the big leagues, like Jung Ho-Gong right now for the Pirates, but also guys who are still, you know, making their bones over there.
Byung-Hyun Kim, 394 major league appearances. Wow. And also, he made $20 million.
That's amazing, man.
And the Rockies paid him the highest salary he ever made, $6.575 million in 2005. All right, that's enough.
He was 2005's Boone Logan.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. The Rockies traded him to the Marlins for Jorge Julio on May 13th of 2007. Jorge Julio, of course, was later famous for being booed off the mound in the tiebreaker game in 2007 when he blew the 13th inning, top of the 13th inning to the Padres.
And then
ended up
just like
Young
Hyun Kim.
Thank you, Ramon Ramirez.
And won.
Woo!
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's 10 minutes of nonsense.
Yeah.
Hey, so welcome in. Not a good last 10 days or so of baseball for your Colorado Rockies on the field,
but
off the field.
They're not mine.
Things are, I'm going the Ted Leitner route. When they're playing badly, they're going to be your Colorado Rockies, everyone. When they're good, they'll be my Colorado Rockies.
It's like the children, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
They're your kids.
When they do well, they're our children. When they screw up, they're yours.
But off the field, an exciting week in that the Rockies have agreed to terms with their top two draft picks from this year, Brendan Rodgers, the third overall selection in the first round of last week's MLB first-year player draft, and Mike Nikorak, who's the 27th overall pick. They have also signed a compensation balance agreement pick, the CBA slot in that area between the first and second rounds. Tyler Nevin, who's the son of AAA Arizona Diamondbacks manager Phil Nevin. Of course, you remember Phil Nevin from being the legendary San Diego Padre that he was, drafted by the Houston Astros. And yesterday,
number one
Tyler
overall,
Nevin,
right? He was the number one overall pick. Yeah.
Tyler Nevin met the media while his new team was playing his dad's old team, which was kind of cool. Somebody pointed that out to him. And what I always remember Phil Nevin from, there's a great video, and I think it's still on YouTube somewhere, but when Matt Vasgersian was hired to be the radio voice and the TV voice of the San Diego Padres, Mark Grant, one of our very good pals, Mudcat, took Matt Vasgersian on like a car tour of San Diego, and Matt just had a bullhorn and was yelling things at people on the sidewalk, telling them that he was the new voice of the Padres. But he, at one point, they're driving around like the Gas Lamp District or something. And I just remember Matt Vasgersian going, "There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Phil Nevin." So that's,
I can't think of Phil Nevin without picturing that video.
Tyler Nevin yesterday, really nice kid. He talked about how he's still got some time to fill out his frame, and he could be a big power guy. He'll go to Grand Junction. And speaking of Grand Junction, we're headed on episode 49 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Tim Ray, the general manager of the Grand Junction Rockies, will join the show today to talk about the excitement around this roster that they're getting built in Grand Junction. Last night, they opened up with a 16-10 win on the road at Idaho Falls. So we'll talk to him about that and a whole lot more. And we will talk about some of these guys who came out of the draft and delve into what you might see in Grand Junction and elsewhere this year. We'll preview that, and we'll preview the Boise Hawks, who also started last night with a victory. So, but not a good real fun week of Major League Baseball.
No, the team has lost 8 of 9 now. The starting pitching has not been good, save for one Jorge De La Rosa in the month of June. They lost all four of their games against the Astros, allowed 12 home runs in that series. No starting pitcher made it past the fifth in that. Actually, in the month of June, Jorge De La Rosa has been very awesome in his three starts in the month of June. He is 3-0 pitcher wins, 2.70 ERA for De La Rosa in the month of June, 18 punchouts in 20 innings. He has a 162 batting average against. Unfortunately, nobody else is joining him on that train right now. The only other good pitcher who has had an outstanding month of June so far has been Tommy Kahnle, to be perfectly honest. Kahnle came up from AAA in 8 appearances. He allowed just one earned run in his 8 2/3 innings. That's a 1.04 ERA. And he has 11 punchouts in those 8 2/3 as well. 6 walks, so we will gloss over that very, very quickly. But the 11 Ks and 8 2/3 and, hit 97, 98 on the gun, that is a very good sign from Tommy Kahnle so far. On the hitting side, the month of June has basically been all about Carlos Gonzalez. He is basically where he needs to be right now. In the month, hitting .306 with 6 home runs, 14 driven in. He has homered in 3 straight games as of the recording of this podcast, and a 1,009 ERA, or ERA, OPS in the month of June. 1,009
It'd
ERA.
It'd be impressive if he had a 1,009
ERA. Well, probably be about right for this team at this point. So, but Troy Tulowitzki also having a very good month, hitting .367 in the month of June, 3 homers, 14 driven in as well, a 974 OPS. Even still DJ, he's cooled off a little bit, but still hitting .303 in the month. I found it interesting that Brandon Barnes has a 2.94 ERA since Dick Mania is back on the DL with a plantar fasciitis issue. And who knows if we're going to see him for the rest of the season, considering that the fickle nature of a plantar fasciitis injury. Plus, I just like saying the words plantar fasciitis. Brandon Barnes, 2.94 this month. Only one extra base hit, though. He is leading the team in walks in the month with 7. So Brandon Barnes finding a way to get on base, play some good defense. Since he has been a worthwhile replacement for Corey Dickerson, and still Kyle Parker leading the team in batting average this month with an even 1,000 mark. Free Kyle Parker.
Obviously, Kyle Parker would be atop that list because he's a star like that.
Yes, he is.
It's been starting pitching has been very frustrating to watch. I mean, even yesterday, David Hale goes out, doesn't throw up a real stinker, but doesn't get deep into the game. And, you know, the Rockies, he gives up a run in the first. They come back with 3 in the bottom of the first. And you think, like, all right, this team's, they're on the way. They're, you know, frustrated. Got to break out of this little slide here with a win. And it just did not come together after that. Just offensively did not look good. You know, guys seemed like they were kind of chasing again in some odd situations. Two low grounds out to the right side on a pitch that was at his shoulders. It's, you know,
which is kind of impressive, to be honest.
Yeah, it's true. But it was just, we were talking before the show, they actually are at the low point of this season now.
Yeah.
They're 10 games under 500 for the first time this year.
Yeah, this is the first time they've been 10 games under.
You can't start a homestand. I mean, this is, and our pal Matt Gross has a really good piece up on Purple Row today about what is going on with the Rockies so far this year at Coors Field and what it means going forward for this team, because this team has been awful at home this year.
Yeah.
And when was the last time you ever said that about a Colorado Rockies team? At least you could count on that. Like, they'll be terrible on the road, but at least they're going to be good at home. The Rockies so far this year, 15 and 18 on the road. They're 13 and 20 at Coors Field. That is the second fewest wins at a home ballpark in the National League. Only the Brewers have been worse at 11 and 24.
And only the A's have a worse record in the American League as well. The Indians are 13 and 19 at home, oddly enough. The Rockies 13 and 20, but the A's are 12 and 19 at O.co. Fascinating.
Yeah, it's very weird. It is very, very weird the way that these struggles have gone for this team. And, you know, if they want to continue to hang around, and I don't even know if you could call it hanging around now at this stretch, I mean, they're going to need to go on a 6-7 game winning streak to pull back into hanging around mode. But if you want to hang around, it's a good way to get it started. If you want to hang around, you got to start winning at home. You have to start winning at home.
Yeah. And they're averaging over 5 runs per game at home this year, which is good.
But yeah, they've got a 300 team batting average at home this year.
Their ERA at home is 5.47.
Yeah.
That's bad.
That is not so good.
And you look at their stuff on the road, that ERA on the road drops over a run. They have a 4.27 ERA as a team on the road, which really is not that bad for this team.
Yeah.
But collectively as a team on the road, they can't really put it together offensively, which has been what we've seen since 1993. They're hitting .236 on the road this year.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But they're 15 and 18 because they're getting decent pitching.
This is a team that makes you scratch your head in a whole lot of ways.
And it has. It's been the same thing forever. You know, it's been the same arguments we were having this year at this time of June 19th, probably the same ones we were having last year on June 19th. We can go back and check PDP episode 14 and probably find the same things happening.
That's probably true. That's probably very true. Well, let's talk about something that could be very exciting by the end of the week.
Am I making my bold prediction again? Because I'm not going to do that anymore.
I think 3 weeks in a row, you got to make your bold prediction.
3 weeks in a row. It makes it not a bold prediction anymore.
Third time's a charm. The Rockies did finally place right-handed pitcher Jordan Lyles on the 60-day disabled list this week. That frees up a 40-man roster spot. And one man who could fill that roster spot is top Rockies prospect Jonathan Gray. John Gray is slated to start for AAA Albuquerque on Sunday. As of right now, Chris Russen is slated to start for the Colorado Rockies on Sunday. I thought it was somewhat telling. Our good pal Nick Groke of the local newspaper, he posted on Twitter yesterday that as of right now, Russen was, quote, penciled in to that slot to start on Sunday. So maybe there has been some talk around the organization, or maybe Nick is just as aware of as everybody else that seems like that's going to be the move. And as of right now, they're still saying Russen is there. But it looks like John Gray, if he's not coming up now,
When the hell is he going to come up?
When is he going to come up? We heard a rumor last week that the Rockies avoided promoting him to make the start on Tuesday against the Astros because of the tropical storm in the Houston area. I have no idea the connection between that. I don't know if they thought maybe he'd get screwed up travel-wise and they didn't want him to miss a start if he didn't make it to Houston. I don't know. Mean, I don't know what.
Yeah, that's weak if that's legit, but...
And we also, somebody tweeted into us yesterday and said, am I wrong in feeling like the Rockies are going to wait another start so Gray doesn't debut on a Sunday at home, big crowd? They generally put out a weaker lineup on Sunday. And I said, you know, if you're holding your top prospect back from pitching against the Brewers in a game in June because there's going to be a big crowd there and it's a Sunday, that seems like a weird indictment on the franchise. And so I don't see that being the case. I see zero reasons why John Gray does not get promoted this week. Last time out, he finally found his strikeout stuff. He fanned 8 for Albuquerque over 6 innings in his last start.
As a season.
If not now, when?
Yeah. I mean, in his last 9 starts, 2.72 ERA for John Gray, a 2.33 opponent average.
Do you have any bold predictions here?
No. I really don't understand that at all, like the Sunday thing. Like, Eddie Butler debuted on a Friday. What's the difference? The Dodgers were in town. It was a big crowd.
Somebody else pointed out Drew Pomeranz debuted on a Sunday.
Yeah. Alan Johnson debuted on
Sunday. And then I responded to that and said, well, but we're trying to talk about, like, good pitchers here, Drew Pomeranz. The local newspaper has a stand on the concourse behind home plate at Coors, and they've got, like, a little TV screen there, and it rotates through, you know, like, Rockies-related coverage and stuff. And this is just a very fitting thing for the local newspaper. One of the headlines that they not scroll past, it stays on the screen for a good amount of time, is the front page of the local newspaper's sports section from one day recently in which the local newspaper said, quote, Pomeranz looks like a keeper. So
when was that written?
Yep. Sure. Okay. But I mean, honestly, I see zero things holding John Gray back now. The Super 2 deadline has passed. He's dominating in AAA. He's now getting guys out via the strikeout. He's gotten a decent amount of ground balls. He induces weak contact. He has done everything they could possibly want. The only thing that would be keeping John Gray down right now is like, oh God, what if he comes up and he's not good? Like, that's the only thing that I can conceive of.
If that's it, then
fear.
Who cares? You have to bring him up at some point.
Right. I don't get it.
I mean, his 6 straight quality starts, quote unquote, 6 innings or more, 3 runs or less in AAA right now, in the PCL, with a very tough hitters league, as we've detailed here many, many a time. He's only allowed more than 4 hits once in his last 4 starts. He's only walked 1 batter in 2 of his last 3 starts. He's only walked 3 times this year. Like, he's
ready. Doing everything.
He's ready. He's absolutely ready. There's no reason at all to keep him down anymore. He has gone at least 6 innings in 6 straight starts and in 7 of his last 8.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's like pretty good.
That's like not
baseball.
Bad.
I am failing to see the reasoning behind any other. It's not just like, you know, well, he needs some more work on this or on that.
No, he doesn't.
Like, there is nothing that you could throw out there.
Yeah.
You know?
He's commanding the zone. His fastball is popping. They like the velocity on it still. It's getting better as the season wears on. He's missing a lot more bats. He's generating a lot more weak contact. I don't see the point at all to keep him down in AAA anymore.
Yeah.
He needs to come up and start Sunday. That's basically it. Fact of the matter. It's his turn in the rotation. It's going to be against the Brewers. They'll be throwing out a weaker lineup too. Who cares if Tulo's not in the lineup or if Cargo's not in the lineup? Who cares? The Brewers are going to be throwing out Shane Peterson and Scooter Jeanette. Who cares?
Guy named Scooter.
Yeah.
Since the start of May, we talked about how John Gray, we kind of at one point said, oh, well, it's a really rough start. And, you know, then he got a couple of good starts under his belt. And it's like, well, yeah, but, you know, look at kind of how he started. That was tough. But now we've kind of discussed the anomaly was April. The anomaly is the bad starts at the beginning of the season because everything has been good since then. These are his numbers since the start of May. 3-2 record, 2.72 ERA in his last 9 starts. In 56 and a third innings, he's only allowed 20 runs, 17 of them earned. He has struck out 14, or check that, he struck out 36, he's walked 14. Opponents are only batting .233 against him. So this is a 2-month-long, basically, stretch of goodness now.
Yeah.
So that's it. I mean, there is nothing left that you could say, well, he's still working on X.
His ERA by month, 1070, 278, 261. What's the outlier there?
Yeah. And, you know, Chris Russen gave this team more than I think they ever would have expected out of Chris Russen when he came up and first got his feet wet. Went out that first time against the Reds on the road, 7 innings, 1 run on 4 hits. He struck out 5. He walked 4. Next time out, he pitched in relief, 4 2/3 against the Phillies on the 31st. Didn't give up a run on 4 hits over those 4 2/3. Then he went 7 innings again. After his first 3 outings in a Rockies uniform, Chris Russen was 2-0 with a 1.45 ERA. But the wheels have come off these last 2 times out. Against the Marlins, he gave up 6 runs on 11 hits and 5 1/3 on the 11th. 7 runs on 9 hits over 4 innings on the road at Houston on the 16th. Chris Russen was great for what they needed him to be for those first 3 outings. What are you waiting on now?
Gray gave up 22 runs in 4 April appearances. He's given up 20 runs in 9 appearances since.
He's got to be here.
He has to
be. He's got to be here on Sunday. Point. It is go time. If you want to inject...
We better not be talking about this next Friday.
Right, exactly. Next Friday, we better be talking about John Gray's first turn plus through the rotation, because he'll be on the way to his second start at that point, and we better be into that conversation.
Yes.
Because if we're not, something is
horribly,
very weird.
Horribly wrong.
You know, because we've talked to John Gray. We talked to John Gray on this show. I've talked to him for MILB stories. He feels healthy. He feels like he's getting the work done that he needs to get done. It's not something strange that's going on. Well, you know, they want him to work on this, or they want him to.
He passes the numbers test. He passes the eye test. It does not matter. He'll pass the SATs, you know, at this point.
I don't know, man. If he's not up by Sunday, I'll be very, very confused.
Something is
amiss. He'll be up by Sunday.
Yeah.
He'll be up.
He has to be.
So, yeah, I guess we'll see. Well, with that, let's do this. Let's head out right now to Grand Junction, Colorado, the place where John Gray started his professional career in the Rockies minor league system. We're going to catch up with Tim Ray, the general manager of the Grand Junction Rockies, to talk a little short season baseball next. We haven't gotten a chance to check in with a Rockies minor league affiliate in a while because we checked in with all the full season teams, and the short season teams are finally underway. Last night, opening night in the Northwest League and the Pioneer League, and we are joined by Tim Ray, the general manager of the Grand Junction Rockies. Welcome to the show, Tim. How's things?
Guys, thanks so much for having me. Let's play ball, huh?
Absolutely. It was a good start for your guys last night. It was like a football score. They're on the road in Idaho. They get a 16-10 win, so a couple of good touchdown drives. Brian Stevens, 2 home runs. It's different for a minor league staff when a team starts on the road as well. Anthony and I think, only worked seasons in which our team started at home, so it's kind of weird.
True.
Imagining, like, oh, you guys get like an extra 3 days. But I would imagine that the run-up to opening day is probably pretty insane right now for you guys.
Well, you know, with the guys starting there in Idaho Falls, it does allow us to add on about another 4 or 5 days for preparation. And at this stage, boy, you can use any extra hour that is awarded to you. So, boy, it's a great start for the ball club last night. And I was happy for Gavin Glantz, the pitcher who came out of the bullpen last year for us and now repeating his second year here now in the Pioneer League, getting the start last night. I know he was nervous. Everybody is on the true opening day. And so congratulations to him. But, yeah, we've been able to make sure that the hot dogs are hot and the beer is cold for when those guys return on Monday.
Well, this is an exciting time for you guys. I mean, not just in that it's opening day and fans are going to be filling Soplesio Field soon, but the roster that you're going to have in Grand Junction this year is really exciting. Obviously, Brendan Rodgers, the Rockies' top overall pick, 3rd selection in the draft this season, he'll be there. Mike Nickrack, who was the 27th overall pick, and the Rockies' 2nd first-round pick, who was at Coors Field yesterday, he'll be there. Tyler Nevin, a 3rd baseman who was a competitive balance pick, he'll be there. He was at Coors Field yesterday, met the media. A couple other early-round guys, Javier Medina, who's a right-handed pitcher, was in the 3rd round. Mike Zimmerman, a lefty from the 11th round. This roster, I mean, you guys are very familiar with getting draft picks soon after the draft and the quality of talent that they bring in. But everybody's raving so much about this draft. Is there kind of a different energy around these guys who are coming in for this 2015 season?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the Rockies haven't had, these many first-round picks in quite some time. So, yeah, I mean, we're getting spoiled here in Grand Junction. It all started with our first year here when we moved the ball club from Casper in 2012. David Dahl was the high school kid out of Alabama. He was the number one pick. And then 2013, it was Jonathan Gray, the right-hander out of the University of Oklahoma. And then Kyle Freeland last year in 2014, the left-hander, of course, went to Thomas Jefferson High School in Denver and came in with some great numbers out of the University of Evansville. So we were 3 for 3 coming into this year. And, yes, typically this level, we see a lot of those high school high-round draft picks. But, you know, nothing is a forgiven. And especially when 2 out of your last 3 first-round draft picks were college guys, you didn't really know if those guys this year were going to filter to us. And plus, with Boise being a new affiliate, you didn't know. And so when the news came out, man, we were excited.
Yeah, and take us through like what you guys are doing to ramp up for opening day. I mean, obviously you have these guys coming. They're going to be ready possibly for your first game at Saplesio Field. So are you guys meeting up with them as of yet in the next couple of days and getting ready to kind of use your promotion schedule to show that Grand Junction is going to be promoting these guys pretty much all year round?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's been a huge media blitz, you know, since the kids were assigned to the Grand Junction Rockies. And I'm around town throughout the day every day, and there is a certain buzz to this. And I think that opening day, folks are very excited. And plus, too, you know, our last 2 draft picks were pitchers. And so you were – and with Jonathan Gray, it took Jonathan almost a month before he got on the field. And then Kyle Freeland only had maybe 4 starts here, 3 starts before he was moved on. And what's exciting about these guys, especially with Brendan, is the fact that, you know, he'll probably be an everyday player. He's a position player, shortstop, and, you know, with the third baseman and so on and so forth. So having these guys here then each night in uniform with the prospect of being able to play really adds a certain persona to it, and the fans are very, very excited about that. And so... No, it's very exciting. We've been all over the media with the homestand coming up. Monday's home opener will be the first of 8 in a row. And so, there's a lot of excitement. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And Tim, we talked about this on our last podcast, but the fact of the matter is there's not a lot of really great collegiate baseball programs in the Rocky Mountain region. CU doesn't have a team. The University of Wyoming doesn't have a team anymore. And really, Grand Junction, with its rich baseball tradition, is basically one of the bastions of baseball in that Rocky Mountain region. You got the JUCO World Series there. Tell me about how the team has been received so far in the first few years in your time in Grand Junction, and really just how much that city has just this rich love for baseball.
Yeah. Well, as you know, this ball club moved from Casper. And the last game was played in Casper in September of 2011. And then in October of 2011, I was leading 2 moving trucks. I felt like the Baltimore Colts. Here we are with a couple of moving trucks. And, you know, we're heading down I-70 to Grand Junction. And so since I've been on the ground since October of 2011, it really has been electric. There's a special feel here. History of baseball does have a rich tradition. You know, the Junior College World Series, as you alluded to, has been going on since 1955.
Right,
and
amazing.
They get a tremendous turnout here. This is like a miniature Omaha, if you will. I mean, we're talking about a volunteer base of about 300 people that help put this on. They are not paid folks. And, you know, a lot of these people take vacation time around the Junior College World Series and donate their time to do whatever needs to be done to get this tournament rocking. It's a great, great event. And then Colorado Mesa University, you know, they've been one of the top Division II, NCAA right. Division II programs for quite some time. They were ranked number one in the nation for about 6 weeks this year and then got beat in the regional tournament last year, ended up national runner-up. And so, and then, of course, with the high school baseball, you know, around the area, you know, the city, along with the JUCO committee, they put $8.2 million into this stadium, and it was completed in 2012. So if you've not been over here for a while, you're not going to recognize it. We have this huge tower that goes from home plate down the first base line. Three levels, including an outdoor level. The top level, the third level, I should say, is the media row, and then the very top level, four, as they call it, it's a 2,200 square foot hospitality suite, and we sell that out every single ball game, and people just love watching the game from up there. And for a short season ball club like ourselves, being, you know, having the opportunity to play here is absolutely a blessing. But obviously, that was something on the radar of the Montforts when they bought this ball club, and all the other investors when they moved this club here. They wanted to come to Grand Junction because of the rich baseball tradition, and so we've worked our way in very well. We're a fabric of the community. In 2013, we received the John Henry Moss Community Service Award for all of minor league baseballs. You know, there's 160 minor league baseball teams in the country, and it goes to one team each year. In just our second year of operation, Grand Junction Rockies received that prestigious award for the top minor league team for community service based on baseball. And it's just been awesome. But that is kind of the focal point of our ownership. You know, they want us involved in the community. They want to be involved in the community, and it's just been a win-win for everybody.
Tim, we got this question, and somebody tweeted this question at us last night, and I think it's a good one for baseball fans who don't necessarily understand. You think about a baseball general manager, and you think about Billy Beane, or you think about whoever, you know, guys wheeling and dealing, making trades, all that kind of stuff. But in the minor leagues, that's completely different because it's all about the business side. So tell us, I mean, I do work for you guys. I do some website stuff and some graphic design stuff and all that kind of stuff. So I know that your job never stops because we have conversations in December. We'll talk about things, you know, when the promotion schedule is coming together in January. So it doesn't stop. But tell people who don't know necessarily what the role of a minor league GM is to lead a front office.
Well, I mean, we're, you know, as I say, we keep the hot dogs hot and the beer cold, the white mustard stains off the concourse, make sure the restrooms are clean. No, minor league baseball, as you mentioned, Tyler, is totally different from the GM of a major league ball club. These players that are here, these coaches that are with us, they are employees of the Colorado Rockies. And we really don't have much say. Once they're here, we make sure that everybody is safe and secure by staying with local host families and what have you. But it is our responsibility. Minor league baseball is like a marketing wheel, if you will, pardon the pun. But it's, you know, there are only four revenue streams in minor league baseball, and one comes from ticketing. The other is a sponsorship, then merchandise, and then one of our largest is food and beverage. And so my main responsibility is to make sure those four pieces of the pie are done to its optimum. You know, this is a for-profit business. We're not a nonprofit, and so this is operated as a business, and all within their own little companies, if you will, all four of those pieces of the pie that I was describing. But I got to tell you guys, one of the great, again, visions of our ownership was to keep our price points low. And that's something that we get. That's our number one comment that we get from our fans is, I can't tell you how many times during a home game I'll have fans come up to me and say, hey, thank you so much for keeping the prices affordable. It's $9 to get into a game, a 16-ounce beer, that same beer that you would buy at Coors Field, is just $3.50 here.
Wow.
And that's, yeah.
Sold.
And, wow. Yeah, absolutely, guys. And that's across the board. That's all of our brands of beer. We have hot dollar hot dogs on Wednesdays. We have dollar ice cream here, where a youngster can buy 8 ounces of ice cream into a little miniature batting helmet that's of the Grand Junction Rockies, and with all the toppings, $1.
That's awesome.
I mean, our cost on that, guys, is just under $1, but we look at it as a loss leader. You know, that's an opportunity for us to, you know, get that ice cream out there, get it into a young person's hand, and they get something to take home with them. People start talking about the ice cream here. Grand Junction Rockies, home of the dollar ice cream, what have you. And we, the last couple of years, we've teamed up with a local dairy here, Graf Dairy, that has been established for, 30, 40 years in this town. And they are known for their homemade ice cream. That's what we fill those miniature helmets with, and the fans, you know, they can't believe that they get it for a dollar. And so we keep everything extremely affordable. And so, again, that's been such a plus for our fan base.
All right, Tim, on top of delicious dollar ice cream and dollar hot dogs and all that amazing things that you just mentioned, fans coming out of Saplesio Field, what can they expect this year, and what is your one promotion you are looking at this year as the one big-time promotion you cannot wait for? You're putting all your eggs in that one basket this year.
Well, I think with us, along with most minor league and major league baseball teams, fireworks really drives the night. And we're going to be having five different fireworks shows this year. We see that when we do a fireworks game on Friday nights, our Friday Work Fire Nights show, that our attendance increases by 79%.
Wow.
And so we're all about the fireworks, and we've got a young man who comes over from Denver and puts on the show for us, and we just get such positive comments. So we'll be doing that again on each of our four Friday nights, along with a Sunday on September, I believe it's September 6th, which is Sunday of that Labor Day weekend. And so we're very excited about that. Every night, guys, we've got giveaways. Opening Day, City Market has sponsored the Opening Day T-shirts, which has been a standard for us each opening day. B&H Sports will sponsor the scheduled magnets the next day. And it goes on and on and on. But a lot of the things that we do, too, are based around our local communities. For instance, Palisade, which is about 10 miles down the road here, they're known for their peaches. And, I mean, there are peach orchards all over the place.
Right.
And if you've never had a Palisade peach, shame on you. Because,
oh, they're fantastic.
oh, boy, you put your mouth into that, and the juice just runs right down your right leg. And it is just it is awesome. And so what we do, we started this last year, we have Palisade Peach Night. Well, we'll bring out a lot of the vendors from their farmer's market, and they'll set up underneath our stadium
stand.
That is
so cool.
And they'll have different vending opportunities where our fans can come out and buy fresh produce, fresh fruit, along with the Palisade peaches, jams, and stuff like that. Last year we had a homemade peach salsa that was at our Mexican cantina, that you can put on your Mexican food. We also had peach rallies there at the concession stand for the hot dogs and the brats and all that. And instead of throwing out the first pitch, we threw out the first peach. And so so we'll be doing that again this year. And then Olathe is just down the road, about 40 minutes away, and they're known for their sweet corn, as you guys know.
Right.
And man, oh man, Olathe sweet corn. So we've got 3 days designated where they're going to be coming over with their sweet corn. We've got a roaster out here, and so fans will be able to buy a buck an ear. Each ear of corn, just a buck, and they can shuck it right there as it comes through the roaster, dip it into a bucket of butter, throw some salt on there, and that is about the closest you're going to get to heaven if you haven't already been guaranteed a spot there.
That is outstanding. That's and now I'm starving.
Fun?
It's going to be a lot of fun. That is, yeah. If you haven't made the trip to Grand Junction, head over to Grand Junction, because Saplesio Field is going to be a lot of fun this year.
Well, and two guys, you know what's great about this level. I mean, here's our number one draft picks coming in. This is the level where, you know what, they're all staying with host families.
Yeah.
And as a fan, you can come over here, hug them, shake their hand, get your picture taken with them, get their autograph, talk to them about home, talk to them about what great golf course have they played lately. I mean, it is such a personal feeling with this ball club here because of the level. You know, we're rookie league. This is the first year of professional baseball. And, you know, we have these guys in and out of the schools here. We have them around town doing autograph signings for the public. And so this is really when you get to know these kids. And then as they start to climb up the ladder, then our fans said, boy, I remember him when he played in Grand Junction. Well, when Eddie Butler and Scott Olberg became our first two big leaguers, a lot of that was happening. And so that's the fun of having a rookie league team right here in Grand Junction.
You never get to be closer to players than you can at the minor league level, and especially at those lower levels when the guys are young. They're getting their first taste of professional baseball and, you know, hang around the ballpark, hang around host families. They're around town. They're at the mall. They're at restaurants. Go check out a game in Grand Junction this year because that is going to be a very fun roster to watch and obviously a ton of good promotions and stuff. And Tim Ray, the general manager of the Grand Junction Rockies. Tim, thanks a ton for spending a little while with us and talking some people over to Saplesio, and we'll see you this summer.
Okay, guys, come on over for a 16-ouncer.
That sounds awesome.
Will do.
If you head over to the Western Slope this year, it's going to be a fun, talent-laden Grand Junction Rockies team.
Awesome.
I've done freelance work for the Grand Junction Rockies for 2 years now. I've never made it over there for a game. I really need to do that.
Yeah, I would love to, actually.
I'm going to do that this summer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a bad road trip. It's only a few hours from Denver.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems all right. You know, yeah. Go over and grab a GJ hat. That'll be my whole aim.
Yeah. Did you see the new Boise Hawks hats?
Yes.
That out?
The all purples. That was
Shut
one of the.
Shut up and take my money.
This is the last show that we do before I turn 30 on Sunday, and that was like one of like two things that I asked for. My mom's like, "What can I get you for your birthday?" And I was like, "I don't know. Just give me this Boise Hawks."
Your mom talks like that?
Yeah. You've met her. Man, what can I get you for your birthday?
Man, what do you want for your birthday? Man.
So the Grand Junction Rockies opened the season last night. So did the short season Class A Boise Hawks. They are in the Northwest League. New Rockies affiliation there. We'll catch up with somebody from Boise hopefully next week.
Yeah.
And it's not Boise, by the way. It's Boise, which I learned while
Boise,
doing the Mountain West.
Like high C? Like the drink?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Basically.
Okay.
Boise. And they get very mad if you say Boise. It's Boise.
Boise?
I learned this when I did the Mountain West Conference football championship game, pregame, and postgame, and halftime stuff, and they made a point to say, like, oh, make sure you call it Boise on the air now. Okay,
Boise.
Sure. So it's the Boise Hawks,
okay,
and the Grand Junction Rockies. And both teams opened up
Grand
last night
Junction.
With wins. The Grand
Junction
Rockies. Both teams opened up with wins last night, and there obviously is a ton of talent on that Grand Junction roster. Now, one thing that I did want to make sure to point out, Kyle Freeland is on that Grand Junction roster.
Correct.
Now, we don't exactly know what the full situation is with Kyle Freeland because technically he could be added to a roster just to be placed on the disabled list. Once the short season teams are there, you have to be added somewhere. And there are, as of right now, far more players listed on the Grand Junction roster than can be active. Sometimes those moves don't get relayed very quickly to our people at MILB. So we're not entirely sure if Kyle Freeland is there to pitch and get ready or if he is there and not actually there, if it's just a paper move and he's still in Arizona and still trying to work his way back from the injury. So we'll keep you updated on that. One guy who is with a short season club and is going to make an appearance soon, as it appears, is Tyler Matzek. Matzek is going to be a member of the Boise Hawks for a rehab assignment. And so that'll be something to watch because, you know, it's
gotta
at
get
some
him back.
Point, at yeah. some point, you got to get him back. I mean, yeah. especially we talked about the struggles with this rotation. At some point, you got to get Tyler Matzek back in the mix. So we did not see him really leave action for too long. I mean, about a month or so, in which the Rockies worked on some mechanical stuff with him. He did not get the start last night, by the way. Boise got a 3-1 win over the Rockies' former Northwest League affiliate, the Tri-City Dust Devils, but Javier Palacios got the win in that one. 7 innings on opening night, a run on 4 hits. He picked up the win. But let's talk a little bit about Grand Junction first. I mean, so far from the guys who we have seen signed, and I caught up with
Palacios was the guy that Ben Bather told us to look out for this year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Guy coming over from the DSL.
A very young kid, 21 years old. He is out of Venezuela. But he did pitch in the DSL from 2011 to 2013. Last year, he was with Grand Junction. He had a pretty tough season last year, 6-5, a 6.21 ERA, but still got the promotion this year to Boise. So
21 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
very good start last
night. Going forward. But these three guys, especially who came through Coors Field this week, these top three picks, Brendan Rodgers and Mike Nikorak especially, and then Tyler Nevin, the competitive balance pick also, headed to Grand Junction. All very impressive. Mike Nikorak was a very impressive kid to talk to. Brendan Rodgers, you could tell, was like bursting with energy to get playing baseball. I mean, you know, you grew up with kids like that. I grew up with kids like that. There are guys who are just baseball. They're dirt bags. That's where the term comes from. They're gym rats. They're dirt bags. They're that. They're just like
scrappy, they're gritty.
Yeah, but it's like an addiction. It's like those guys, when they're away from baseball, they cannot stand it. And that's how Brendan Rodgers seemed. He hadn't played a game since April 20th, and he said, you know, like, oh, I've been taking BP and ground balls, but I really cannot wait to get out there. And you could feel that from him. Him and Nikorak, both very excited and both very exciting guys to watch this season in Grand Junction.
And what's great is that Rodgers, who's a third overall pick, was basically a consensus number one overall talent by most publications. And he still signed for less than slot money. The slot that
considerably less.
About $6.2 million. He signed for $5.5 million. It's like, well, he's not really Mother Teresa in that respect. But in the very sense of the term, it let the Rockies, you know, give more money to them to sign players later in the round. Like, give more money to Mike Nikorak, who signed for a little bit above slot.
Right.
Nikorak's slot at 27 was a little bit over $2 million, and he signed for 2.3. So, you know, they were able to pay Rodgers a little bit less, but then give that money to Nikorak, because honestly, Mike Nikorak is probably a top 15 talent in terms of the pitching prospects that were in this draft. And the Rockies scooped him up at number 27. The Rockies did a very, very good job early in the draft, and we're going to see how well these guys react to their first taste of pro ball very, very soon.
So those guys are, I mean, definitely probably the biggest two to keep an eye on going into the 2015 season for Grand Junction. But there are some other interesting names on that Grand Junction roster going into the 2015 season. Miles Jones was the 13th round pick. He's another shortstop prospect. It'll be interesting to see where they play him, seeing as how Brendan Rodgers is obviously going to be your everyday shortstop at that slot for Grand Junction. One of the guys who we're going to talk about a little bit later on, Jensen Park, an outfielder from the University of Northern Colorado. He was a 32nd round pick. He's on that roster. Ryan Stevens homered twice in his professional debut last night. He was actually signed out of college. Middle Tennessee State was not drafted. Was just signed as a free agent. Goes out, homers twice, and drives in, I think, six last night. That's not bad.
It's not bad.
Pretty decent.
Driving six in your pro debut.
Parker French. Go ahead. Sorry, I'm just jumping in. I'm so excited about all these fun names to talk about.
I know. There's a lot of really good names.
Yeah. Parker French is a fifth-round pick. He's going to be there, too. They have a lot of these very high-level draft selections, which is what you see in these short-season clubs. And to watch where those guys go and how they develop will be cool as this goes along. Also, Hunter Brothers. Rex Brothers' brother.
He actually pitched last night. Gave up three runs, two earned on three hits and two and a third. Walked one, struck out two in that 16-10 affair.
That high school football game they had there in Idaho
Falls. By
the way,
Miles Jones spelled M-Y-L-Z.
Yeah, and Anthony made a tweet joke about it. And then somebody who knows Miles Jones said, yeah, watch out, Tulo, and tweeted it at Miles Jones.
And I said, hell yeah, let's do this.
I know, exactly, Miles Jones.
I'm a huge fan. It was not a knock on Miles Jones. You never see that name.
It's an awesome name.
M-Y-L-Z.
So Miles Jones.
Do you remember in Myrtle Beach in 2010, we had the three Jones infield? We had Mike Jones, Travis Jones, and then Mycal Jones, M-Y-C-A-L.
M-Y-C-A-L. Mycal Jones is still kicking around in the Brave system. I think he's at Double A now. I think he's in. No, maybe he's in Gwinnett. Maybe he's at Triple A.
We could have had Travis, Mike, Mycal, and Miles.
And Miles, M-Y-L-Z.
How about that? That'd have been awesome.
So that's the Grand Junction side of things. I mean, those are the definitely the higher touted guys, and they'll get their feet wet in the state of Colorado, which is cool. I mean, if you wanted to go over and see Brendan Rodgers this weekend or next weekend, I guess, since he'll probably make his debut early on next week. Yeah, he said he'll go work out with the team for a few days in Idaho Falls and then get into game action next week. Rodgers, you know, Nikorak, those guys, you could do it in 3 hours. I mean, next weekend, Grand Junction Rockies are going to be home. So that's very cool about having that affiliate so close with all these guys who are just jumped out of the draft. The Boise Hawks. Boise is a little closer than Tri-City, Washington, Pasco, Kennewick, and whatever the third one is, where the where the Rockies used to be anchored in the Northwest League. Now they are in Boise and Boise Memorial Stadium, and the Hawks last night debuted with a victory as well over Tri-City. And again, some fun names on that roster, too. I had somebody tweet at me yesterday kind of disappointed that the Rockies were not sending their top picks to Boise. And I said, you know, it's not a knock on Boise. It's because Grant Junction's the lower level affiliate. Presumably, right, some of these guys will go through Boise at some point. But it'll be, to me, fascinating to watch the Rockies handle that affiliation, because Tri-City was like the forgotten team.
Yes.
Tri-City. And I've talked to people in the Rockies organization who said it was sort of that way for them too. And not because of them, but because of how Tri-City operated. Tri-City didn't really have a whole lot to do with the organization. The Rockies would offer to do stuff with them, and the Dust Devils weren't really all about it. And so that seemed kind of strange. So the Rockies, you know, we've kind of talked about this. They seem to be high on building themselves in the Rocky Mountain Empire. They brought in the Albuquerque affiliation. They get the Boise affiliation. Those are basically the two biggest cities outside of Denver in this region, with the exception of Salt Lake. And you start building that stuff. And that's pretty cool. So this Boise affiliation is going to be fun to watch.
I think so too. And they got a couple of guys to look forward to,
yeah,
on that roster this year. Kevin Padlo. Padlo was a fifth round pick last year. Only 18 years old, though, last night, went 1-for-3 with a walk, stole a couple of bases. Also, Hamlet Marte, one of our favorite names in the Rockies, yes, system, a 21-year-old catcher. He is playing for the Boise Hawks this year, went 2-for-4 last night with a double and a run scored. So keep an eye out for him as well. Also, a guy that I know fairly well from my time with Long Beach State, Richard Prigatano. He was with Tri-City last year. He's an outfielder. He is with the team this year playing. He's 22 years old, 11th round pick last season. He went 1-for-3 with an RBI last night, so keep an eye on Richard Prigatano. I'm a huge fan of him. And also a great name, a relief pitcher, Salvador Justo.
That is a good one.
It's a pretty good name. 20 years old, a righty. Also, Alec Kenilvort. They got some great names on Boise Hawks, man.
Angel Lezama.
Yeah.
Kevin Padlo will be a fun one to keep an eye on, because Padlo actually started the season. The Rockies assigned him very aggressively to Class A Asheville, right, to start the year. He really struggled there, so they want to get him, you know, kind of more in his mix. He's 18.
I mean,
throw a kid at 18 yeah. years old into the South Atlantic League is very, very tough, especially for a fifth round pick from a year ago. So Kevin Padlo, if he heads out and starts to rake, then keep an eye on him, because maybe he is going to get that jump back to Asheville once he starts to have a little bit of success,
sure,
at these lower levels. But Boise, I mean, there's some fun guys to watch in Boise so far this season. And don't forget about Max George, the infielder from Regis High School in Denver. Regis is not in Denver. Or maybe it is technically like in a little enclave of Denver. It's Aurora. But Max George, another shortstop, a sixth-round pick last year.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Very good for Grand Junction a year ago. He'll go to Boise this year to get started. So there is some good talent on the Boise roster. And also, I tweeted this out last night. Did you see? We made some jokes about there was a tease of a tweet from a Boise news reporter who said the Boise Hawks this year are going to attempt to defeat the Sun, block
yes.
out the Sun. And we tweeted some jokes about it. And I don't think we ever
Mr.
followed
Burns
up on
and,
it.
Yeah.
But did you see that what they're actually doing?
I did not, actually. What's going
okay.
on?
Okay. So Boise seems to have a similar problem to like Bakersfield, and Potomac was somewhat this way also.
What, it sucks?
But yeah, there's a metal bleacher, you know, seating bowl. And for Boise, their problem there is that during games, the sun sets behind the left field stands and just blasts the right field stands.
Oh, yeah.
So a new member to the ownership group in Boise came up with the idea of running it past his he is also involved with the ownership group in Augusta. They're building a new ballpark there.
Okay.
And he ran past the architects who are handling the ballpark construction in Augusta and said, what can we do to block out the sun? We need to figure out a way. Do we build like a tower? Do we build something that stands up over there to block it out from the first base side? What do we do? And they came up with the idea of a giant inflatable blimp.
What?
That they're going to raise on the third base side to block the sun from hitting the first base side during games. I'm not making this up.
That sounds like a pretty minor league thing to do. I like
it.
I'm
not making it up.
I like that a lot.
It's awesome. That sounds like such a great idea. And I really, really hope that it works.
Oh.
Because that is a fantastic, it's like such a clever concept. I love it.
Absolutely.
So, if you're making a trip to Boise, you can hop on board the first base seats maybe, and this time you might not get scalded there if you have not been to Boise before.
That would be fantastic.
Never have. So that's a look at a couple of the short season teams as we head into the 2015 Northwest League and Pioneer League seasons. You can check out their stuff all season long, of course, on MILB.com. Shameless plug. And what else we got?
Well, one guy I want to look at for the Rockies draft picks going forward that I think could make a little bit of an impact that I've had some experience with. Fourth round pick out of the University of San Diego, David Hill. David Hill was at Long Beach State as a freshman.
Not to be confused with David Hale.
No, David Hill, Hill, H-I-L-L. He was actually on the team with his brother, Michael Hill, on Long Beach State when he was a freshman at age 19.
I went to grade school with a kid named Mike Hill.
This isn't about you. I work on a television show where the host is named Mike Hill, okay? So deal with it.
Whatever happened to Mike Hall?
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's on the Big Ten Network now. Never mind. Please continue.
Can I finish?
Sure.
So David Hill, as a freshman at age 19, went 4-2 with a 4.05 ERA and 17 games, 11 starts for Troy Buckley and the Long Beach State Dirtbags. Only struck out about a little over four batters per nine innings. Left the team after his freshman year to attend JUCO. Came back to the University of San Diego last year and had one of the best years of any pitcher on the West Coast. He went 9-3, had a 2.33 earned run average, 14 starts, including three complete games, struck out over 10 batters per nine innings, 115 punchouts in 103 innings, and only walked 35 batters. The one knock on David Hill last year was that his head coach, his manager for the University of San Diego, did not care about pitch counts whatsoever. There was a times last year where he threw, I think, over 149 pitches in a complete game. So he only threw 103 innings last year, but there is a little bit of wear on that arm, you would have to imagine, especially going forward. So he's a guy to look at. If he has not signed yet, according to Purple Rose. So when he does, when and if he does sign with the Rockies, I'd imagine he would probably be more of an advanced setup, maybe go to Asheville or even Modesto to start out with since he's got that experience. But if his arm doesn't fall off, he is a guy that has taken a huge step forward from when he was a freshman to the time now that he's a junior and now obviously drafted by the Rockies. So he's a guy to look at, whether it's as a starting pitcher or even a guy in the bullpen to start out with, maybe can jump a couple of levels fairly quickly with the stuff that he has, because the Ks per nine went up from 4 to 10 in 2 years of D1 baseball. We had a couple of tweets at us saying that I'm not sure. I thought that was a typo when I first saw it, because obviously you didn't K anybody as a freshman, but then K'd over 10 batters per nine innings as a starting pitcher in the West Coast Conference, a very good baseball conference. I mean, you know, it was the conference that Chris Bryant came from. So David Hill, fourth round pick, guy to look out for, in my opinion.
The guy who I'm going to keep an eye on this year is a late round draft pick, but somebody who I still think is going to be a lot of fun, and not just because he has a Colorado connection, but University of Northern Colorado product and 32nd round pick, Jensen Park. Jensen Park comes out of a smaller school at UNC, but great, was the WAC player of the year. Yeah. Great program. WAC player of the year in Western Athletic Conference. Had a fantastic season. He's a senior, was a senior this past year from Hawaii. A 5.15 batting average in conference play this year. That was the highest in 21 years. Led the league in slugging percentage at .778. On-base percentage at .560. Hits with 51 and total bases with 77. He was a player of the week honor earlier this season as well and was the WAC player of the year. Those are guys who I think you really need to hit on, or you really would like to hit on late in the draft. If you can find somebody from a smaller school or a smaller conference that maybe your scouts have seen that not a ton of other teams have seen, those guys can be impactful down the road. I like Jensen Park. Seems like the type of guy whose game would translate well to climbing the ladder at a relatively accelerated rate for the Rockies, a center fielder, rangy. He's listed at 5'10", 168. But I like Jensen Park. He seems like he'll be a fun guy to watch, and he starts the season in Grand Junction, but again, kind of an older guy for that level at 22 coming out of college. So I'll be intrigued to watch if they give him a shot at a higher level before the season is out. And we've said that about virtually everybody who is talented, but that's one of the things that I think Jeff Breidich brings to this side of things now, is he will be assertive and Zach Wilson will be assertive in pushing guys along the track that they want to see. And I think that's been the way it's gone for the last handful of years under Breidich, which is why we have seen, despite the narrative, it's why we've seen a lot of good talent come out of the minor league system over the last few years, and guys like Corey Dickerson. So that, to me, will be fun seeing now the whole handle on not just the major league side, but the player development side all being under this umbrella that seems to work pretty cohesively between Breidich and Wilson and Bill Schmidt, the scouting director and that staff, I will be very much a fan of observing this process now that you have eliminated the two-headed monster that was throwing wrenches into every possible plan for the last decade.
And to your point, Jensen Park last night, 1-for-4 with a two-run double and a run scored in his Grand Junction debut.
So good start. Yeah. Good start, Jensen Park.
And we talked about this a little bit last time. Colorado has such a very good baseball tradition, but usually the Rockies have not been the team that has picked up the best players from the prep ranks in Colorado. So they can steal a guy like Jensen Park, who's maybe not looked at because he was an older guy playing in a smaller conference, and he could become a guy for them. That would be awesome. I mean, going forward in Asheville, you know, he's a center fielder, and they have a couple of guys who are playing very well right now in Max White and Wes Rogers. So maybe they'll get a promotion to, you know, to Modesto, but then you've got your Jordan Patterson and Ryan Baltapia and Modesto, and then, you know, who knows how that chain of command is going to work out. But, you know, you take the best players available, and that's what the Rockies did in this draft, and I think it's going to serve them very, very well in the future.
The Rockies, one note before we get out of here, they have not yet signed second-round pick Peter Lambert out of San Dimas High School in California. Lambert was the 44th overall selection. He was rated by MLB.com as the 50th best talent in the draft and is a guy who is projectable, 6'2", 185 pounds. He was a UCLA commit, is still a UCLA commit. He has not signed yet, so the Rockies have signed everybody around him so far. Rogers and Nikorak and Nevin were all ahead of him, and they signed Javier Medina, who was a right-handed pitcher out of Saguaro High School in Arizona, with the pick behind him. That was the third round pick, but Peter Lambert, the second round pick in the 44th overall selection, he has not yet signed, so something to keep an eye on over the next few days, hopefully. So,
all right.
You know, I guess that's our, we have exhausted our short season preview for the 2015 season, Anthony.
Well, someone had to do it.
As deep as we could go. Best name in the draft, by the way, Jack Weinkoop out of the University of South Carolina. Apparently, according to his bio, like, no Denver connection.
Which is so bizarre. Come on.
Very weird.
I mean, they already named a brewery after him in Colorado. He might as well pick for the Rock.
There's a street?
Yeah.
Might as well. He's got a connection to the governor. You know,
come on.
Open that brewery. Come on.
Come on.
So that'll do it for episode number 49, the Byung-Hyun Kim Memorial Edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter. We are at Purple Dinocast. He is at Master Tones. I am at Tyler Mon. Again, a big thanks to our guys today for sending in music for episode number 49 of the show. And that came courtesy by one way of our good pal Adam Peterson, but the band is Burn the Fleet. You can find Burn the Fleet out at burnthefleetus.bandcamp.com. They are also going to have a CD release show on July 25th at 7th Circle Music Collective near Federal and 6th Avenue. And we're going to let the song Vidiator play us out today. That is, again, one of our favorite things about this show. And if you can submit music that you play or that you know or from a musician that you know, send it our way, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us your questions there, questions, thoughts, comments, concerns, unless you are angry at us because you work for the local newspaper.
And thanks to Tim Ray for joining us. He was awesome.
Yeah, and a big thanks to Tim Ray for joining us from the Grand Junction Rockies. You can head over to Saplesio Field starting on Monday. They're going to have a t-shirt giveaway that night, I believe, and fireworks coming up later on in the week. And thanks to our guys at ESPN Denver, Purple Row, and thanks to Anthony Masterson for being such a sport.
Aw, gee. Thanks to Tom, too.
Talk to you next week.
Bye. Bye. We'll be right back. By the way, next week we're going to figure out another time to do it. I can't do Friday. I'm in a wedding. Right. I'm the best man in a wedding this next weekend.
You're not a good man at all. It's ironic that someone would call you
I know.
Best
I'm
man.
Not a good man. I'm the best man.
Why couldn't it be him and a pretty good man?
Nope.
The Seinfeld bit?
Yeah. No? So, if we can do it maybe Thursday morning, probably actually early Thursday morning because I got to work early, but we're heading down to Long Beach afterwards. And then the rehearsal for the wedding's at 11 a.m. on Friday, and then that whole rehearsal dinner that next day, and then the whole shebang is on Saturday, and there's going to be a boat involved. And
I'm on a boat.
No, seriously. Like, I'm going to be on a boat. Like, we're gonna roll up to the rehearsal dinner. Like,
please wear Crocs.
Like on a boat and roll up to like the beach. Yeah,
it's my only ask of you is to wear Crocs.
You want to send me some Crocs? I didn't know Crocs were still a thing.
Oh yeah, I saw a guy in Crocs. Like, they're weird. Like, they were like loafer Crocs.
Yeah. Like, I get what people around there would still wear them because they came from Boulder. I saw a commercial for Crocs
from like
the other
Lafayette
day.
Or somewhere, some like weird suburban town. But like the thing with they were like designed to be boat shoes, and then people were like, "These are comfortable. I'm gonna embarrass myself by wearing them in public."
It's like people who wear like the running shoes with the toe fingers in them.
Yeah, remember that trend?
It's still a trend, yo.
Is it?